ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Which is like an immeasurable ocean with endless waves of hunger, thirst, heat, cold, and the other conditions brought about by the passage of time, such as the sensuous wind and the urges of the tongue and sex organs. Nevertheless, although crossing this ocean of sense gratification through severe penances, such persons foolishly drown in a cow's footprint when conquered by useless anger. Thus they exhaust the benefit of their difficult austerities in vain. Purport. Those who do not accept the devotional service of the Supreme Lord can be considered in two categories. Those engaged in sense gratification are easily conquered by the demigods through various weapons, such as hunger, thirst, sexual desire, lamentation for the past, and vain hoping for the future. Such materialistic fools, infatuated with the material world, are easily controlled by the demigods, who are the ultimate supplying agents of sense gratification. But according to Sridhara Swami, persons who attempt to subdue the desires of the material senses and thus avoid the control of the demigods, without surrendering to the Supreme Lord, are even more foolish than the sense gratifiers. Although crossing the ocean of sense gratification, those who perform severe penances without service to the Lord eventually drown in tiny puddles of anger. One who simply performs material penances does not actually purify his heart. By one's material determination, one may restrict the activities of the senses, although one's heart is still filled with material desires. The practical result of this is krodha, or anger. We have seen artificial performers of penance who have become very bitter and angry through denial of the senses. Being indifferent to the Supreme Lord, such persons do not achieve ultimate liberation, nor can they enjoy material sense gratification. Rather, they become angry, and through cursing others or enjoying false pride, they uselessly execute the results of their painful austerities. It is understood that when a yogi curses, he diminishes the mystic power he has accumulated. Thus, anger is neither liberation nor material sense gratification, but merely burns up all the results of material penances and austerities. Being useless, such anger is compared to a useless puddle found in a cow's footprint. Thus, after crossing over the ocean of sense gratification, the great yogis who are indifferent to the Supreme Lord drown in puddles of anger. Although the demigods admit that the devotees of the Lord actually conquer the miseries of material life, it is understood here that a similar result is not to be obtained by so-called yogis who are not interested in devotional service to the Lord. Om Jnana Chimadam Dasya Jnanam Jana Shalakaya Chakshurun Manitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vatsani Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. In this verse of the 11th canto, chapter 4, we're getting some subtle psychological knowledge that even you can control your senses and practice austerities and penances, that's not enough. In other words, the goal of the yoga system is not simply to control your senses and perform austerities. The goal of the yoga system is to please Krishna's senses. We practice sense control in that we only do things that give Krishna pleasure. We are not practicing sense control in and of itself. If someone does like that, the activity becomes pride. To see how powerful I am. After all, you'll read in the seventh canto of Bhagavatam, Hiranyakashipu performed extraordinary austerities. Standing on the tips of his toes with his hands outstretched. For thousands of years. But what was the point of his austerity? He wanted to become materially invincible. Sometimes, persons approaching Krishna consciousness, or those practicing Krishna consciousness, think that the austerities of bhakti yoga are very frightening and cannot be sustained. We're simply advocating the minimum austerities. No intoxication, no meat eating, no gambling, no illicit sex. But in Kali Yuga, refraining from those things seems to be so difficult. We always explain, especially at the time of initiation, that the four regular principles do not make you spiritual. They simply make you a human being. It is the Hare Krishna mantra that makes you spiritual. But if you try to chant the Hare Krishna mantra, if you try to perform devotional service without following the regular principles, it's like the classic example. You light a fire and then pour water on it. You light it and then pour water on it. That becomes a very frustrating activity. And you can see that persons who try to do like that become frustrated and they blame the process of bhakti. So that's one group of persons who become frustrated with bhakti, not understanding the need for purity. Particularly in controlling lust. Without control of lust, there's no determination. Without determination, there can't be any patience. Patience is based on determination. By the uncontrolled senses, there's no determination. Particularly by uncontrolled lust. It's not possible to be materially determined or spiritually determined. And then, without determination, how can you be patient? Soberly, calmly going about your life, knowing that if you endeavor in the proper way, the result will be there. This patience is impossible without determination, and determination is impossible without sense control. The bhakti yogi controls his or her senses by only doing things that give Krishna pleasure. So from the very beginning, the bhakti yogi is involved in pleasure. We are not against sense gratification. Krishna consciousness is about nothing but sense gratification. So please relax. Calmly accept this truth that bhakti yoga is simply about sense gratification. But the critical point is whose sense gratification? And here's where the problems come in. Yes, bhakti yoga is full of sense gratification. It's nothing but sense gratification, but it's all for Krishna. This is the problem, yes. Why should Krishna have all the pleasure? Sometimes we try to make deals, right? Okay, Krishna, some pleasure for you, some pleasure for me. Share market trading. Progress in bhakti yoga means to understand that by focusing on Krishna's pleasure, naturally you're included. But this is a major hurdle sometimes to cross. How can it be? All I have to do is just focus on Krishna's pleasure and automatically I'll be taken care of. Seems scary, doesn't it sometimes? You mean to not meditate on your own pleasure? That sounds like driving a car and just taking your hands off the steering wheel. No, you have to keep your hands on the wheel. You've got to focus, at least to some degree, on your own happiness. Yet, due to the wonderful benediction of the Association of Devotees, you can see examples of devotees who simply focus on Krishna's pleasure, and you see that they're happy. Bhakti thrives on living examples. Good association means association, sangha, that inspires you to sacrifice for Krishna's pleasure. By trying to perform austerities and penances without connection to Krishna's pleasure, the heart becomes very hard and one becomes full of pride. You don't see in the Western world many persons who are trying to control the senses in a material way. for material purposes. In previous ages, previous yugas, or even now, if you wander around India, you'll find so many yogis, so many gyanis, who realize the benefits of material sense control, but don't understand the ultimate pleasure principle, which is Krishna. This verse is pointing out some interesting and subtle psychological information. You can conquer all the material influences, like hunger, thirst, heat, cold, the sensuous wind, the urges of the tongue and sex organs. Still, although you have crossed this immeasurable ocean of sense gratification by your performing severe austerities and penances, nevertheless, you'll drown in the water contained in the cow's hoof print. How can someone drown in such a tiny, tiny pool of water? It happens when one is conquered by anger. Through anger, all the benefits of those material austerities are lost. Who's an example of a classic angry yogi? Hiranyakashipu? Yes, he was an angry yogi. He wanted material powers so that he could become the greatest, materially invincible. He wanted to become immortal by material methods. In the ninth canto, you read about Durvasa Muni. He was extraordinarily materially powerful as a yogi. He could not tolerate that Ambarish Maharaj was always glorified as a great devotee of the Lord. Durvasa Muni thought, here I am performing countless severe austerities and penances. I have so much mystic power. Yet, when people talk about the greatest spiritualist, they talk about Maharaj Ambarish. How can that be? Look at Maharaj Ambarish. He's a king. King means sense enjoyer. Surrounded by royal opulence. And people claim that he is the topmost transcendentalist. And they give him so much credit. What about me? I am a yogi. A mystic yogi performing such austerities and penances. I have so many mystic powers. Durvasa Muni became so envious due to a hard heart that he sought to entrap Maharaj Ambarish in some minor violation of the Kadasi vow. He laid a trap, entrapment. And then when apparently Ambarish Maharaj violated some principle, minor detail. Apparently the detail was minor and even the violation was quite minor. Durvasa Muni arranged that Ambarish Maharaj would have to be in that situation of an apparent minor violation. It was all a setup. He tried to frame Maharaj Ambarish. This is an offense. Why did he do that? Out of envy. A king glorified as a spiritualist. What about me? In other words, his heart was still hard. In spite of so many austerities, in spite of so many penances. This purport explains two categories of persons who are not performing devotional service. Those who are absorbed in sense gratification and those who practice sense control but not for the purpose of serving Krishna. The result of both groups is anger. What does Krishna explain in Bhagavad Gita? First, contemplate the objects of the senses. Jayato Vishaya Pumsa. sunvas teshu pajanayate. By your contemplation of the objects of the senses, lust develops. And then, from lust, must come anger. Contemplation, attachment, lust, and then anger. Now, why must anger follow lust? It must happen because material desires can't satisfy it. And that means you have to find someone to blame. This is the story of material life. Find someone to enjoy with and find someone to blame. These are the twin quests of material existence. Who am I going to enjoy and who am I going to blame? That's all that's going on. Bhakti yoga eradicates those twin pursuits. How does the bhakti yogi eradicate those twin pursuits? Krishna is the one who enjoys, and I am the one who gets the blame. That's the peace form. That's a high price for many persons. They see it that way. The devotee knows it's an easy price. Yes, Krishna is the enjoyer. Let Krishna enjoy. That's the Vrindavan principle. All the cowherd boys, the cowherd men, the gopis, the older cowherd ladies, everyone, the trees, the Jamuna River, the cows, the cat, everyone is simply, let Krishna enjoy. And a real devotee thinks, any problem is actually because of me. Now there may be other circumstances and someone may have made a mistake, but ultimately I'm the source of the blame. If I were more Krishna conscious, that person probably wouldn't have acted in such a way toward me. But due to my material consciousness, I influenced that person to act in that way, or I couldn't influence that person to act in a spiritual way. A devotee, while recognizing various influences and factors around him or her, ultimately thinks, all my problems in life are because I'm not Krishna conscious enough. And not being Krishna conscious enough means I have no attachment for the holy name of Krishna. A devotee is always overwhelmed with lamentation. Why can I not have attraction and attachment for the holy name of Krishna? Durgayam Nidhisamahajri Nana Raga. This is the real problem in my life. No raga, no attraction for the holy name of Krishna. Alright, I may have some economic problems. I may have some family problems, job problems, health problems. Immigration problems. Well, my real problem is no attachment to the holy name of Krishna. If that becomes your foremost meditation, then you are properly situated in the bhakti. So the devotee says, let Krishna have all the enjoyment and let me get all the blame. This is humility. Humility doesn't mean simply you go around with your pranams, bend your shoulders over. The origin of real humility is your understanding. I can't chant the Hare Krishna mantra well enough. All my problems would be solved if I could just hear the holy name. And based on that longing to hear the holy name, the devotee is constantly evaluating and reevaluating his or her lifestyle. Maybe I should adjust this. Maybe I should adjust that. Less of this, more of that. All so I can hear better the holy name of Krishna. That is the beginning of love. If you're willing to organize your whole life and reorganize your whole life, adjust, readjust, tinker here, tinker there, just so you can hear someone, Doesn't that show you care about that person? And Krishna notices. He notices you're doing that. A devotee will do anything just to hear the holy name of Krishna. That is the luxury of life. Once we forget Krishna, even if we try to control our senses, even if we try to perform a lifestyle of austerities and penances, the result is highly unfavorable. The heart becomes hard. So that's why Sridhar Swami in the purport comments that those who attempt to subdue the desires of the material senses without surrendering to the Supreme Lord are even more foolish than the sense gratifiers. Now you might think, well, wait a minute. They're not devotees, but at least they're trying to control their senses and perform austerity. How could they be more foolish than sense gratifiers who know nothing and care nothing about sense control? To understand this perspective, you have to understand the heart. Material austerities and penances not connected to Krishna's service make the hard heart. Make the heart hard. Uncontrolled sense gratification will make you frustrated, but in your exasperation, you may turn to some spiritual solution. But when your heart is hard, due to material penances and austerities, you're so proud, you can't consider any other alternative. I've told an example several times. It still is worth repeating. When I was once touring Thailand, I was talking to Buddhist monks, and I met an abbot, a head of a Buddhist monastery in Thailand. He was from England, and he had been in Thailand for 20, 30 years, meditating. And particularly, he told me, for the last 5 years, he had performed more severe penances and austerities. He had lived in a hut outside the ashram and just stayed there alone for 5 years, meditating, vipassana meditation, on the incoming breath, the outgoing breath, noting the different qualities of the breath and the effects on the mind, all day long, just breathing in, breathing out, sitting in the cross-legged position, noting the movements of the mind. 5 years. Through scorching summer, mosquitoes, sickness. And then he describes, after 5 years of that, one day a villager rode his bicycle by, and villagers, they like to, just like in India, they like to blast the radios, the sign of progress. So the villager cycled by and the radio was blasted. And out from the radio came a pop song from the 50s, which this Buddhist monk recognized. Tell Laura I love her. Tell Laura I need her. Well, you know this song? He heard that song, and uncontrollably tears began to fall from his eyes. And he was bewildered. He confessed, I can't understand how this could happen. For 30 years I've been a monk, and I've done 5 years of severe austerities and penances. How is it that just by hearing some silly pop song, tell Laura I love her, tell Laura I need her, tears uncontrollably went down my face. I explained to him that he hadn't dealt with the loving propensity. Real yoga deals with the complete range of desires and how to connect them to Krishna. He had a raging, loving propensity, which couldn't be repressed. And because that loving propensity was there so strongly, just by hearing a pop song, a silly pop song, in spite of his severe austerities and penances, he became overwhelmed. Tell Laura I love her. Tell Laura I need her. He couldn't understand this. He was just bewildered. How could this happen? It was a blow to his pride. Sometimes our own devotees wonder, am I repressing my loving propensity? If I don't have mundane love, how can I love Krishna?
Yes, sometimes devotees think like that, yes.
If I have mundane love, I know it's mundane, I know it's temporary, I know it's material, but if I have that, I'll be more relaxed and peaceful in my quest for Krishna. Otherwise, if I ignore the material desires in my heart for material affection, I may become 50 or 60 after 20 years of devotional service and then realize, oh no, no one's ever loved me. I've never loved anyone. Oh no, and now it's too late. I'm 55. Quick, let me find a 20-year-old girl. It's a fear, yes? You have to go through material affection, otherwise your ability to relate to Krishna will be severely affected. Bhakti, love of Krishna, stands on its own. You don't have to go through any material experience in order to be able to love Krishna. Why do you go through material experiences? Hopefully, to learn the lesson that you don't have to go through material experiences. That's the whole point. That's the fruit of going through material experiences. That I didn't have to do this. Someone who is wise, after going through material affection, after going through mundane relationships, realized, I didn't have to do that. That's the result. The proper result. But love of Krishna is something else. By serving Krishna will never be the loser. If there's some deficiency in our spiritual progress, it's because we have neglected some aspect of bhakti yoga. That's why we have guidance. We need someone to look over our shoulder and point out how to execute devotional service. We've often explained that devotional service is about guidance. It's an inbuilt requirement. If there's proper guidance, then you don't have to have this paranoia that, oh, I could wind up 60 years old and I haven't dealt with certain desires. And this way I won't be able to properly focus upon Krishna. Material affection is not a precursor or a forerunner to love of Krishna. All the ashrams, all four of them, what are they meant for? Purification. All of them are meant for purification. Purification means making the heart soft and pure, so that it can properly reciprocate with Krishna. When Krishna is the center, you actually can properly deal with all living entities. That empowerment to deal with all living entities comes from Krishna. All living entities are his parts. Therefore, if you focus on Krishna, he'll empower you with the ability to deal with all his parts and parcels. Now, just because material affection will never satisfy the heart, does that mean we go around treating everybody nastily? See, there's no point in my being nice to you because, you know, it's just all material. Therefore, I have every right to be callous and insensitive. I don't even have to be courteous. It's all material stuff. Just focus on your service group. Forget about being nice to anyone. This is also a misunderstanding of bhakti. We don't need to be nice to each other. We don't need to be sensitive to each other. Just focus on your service. But the true result of devotional service is that you see all living entities as part of Krishna. And if you truly see all living entities as part of Krishna, you treat them properly. Dealing with devotees, I've often explained, is not based on material social skills. I might have explained once, when I was a little boy, my father noticed I was very quiet and I was always observing. I think I must have been maybe about 12 years old at that time. So he got me a book, How to Win Friends and Influence People. Dale Carnegie. So, I read the book. I thought, okay, I'll try out some of the techniques. So, my father took me to visit one of his friends who was a piano teacher. And so, according to How to Win Friends and Influence People, you always remember someone's name and what their hobbies are, their likes. You read this book? Yeah. So, as soon as I saw my father's friend, I said, oh, good afternoon, Mr. So-and-so. I'm very interested in the piano. Could you tell me more about it? And he was just, I said a few things like that. He turned to my father. I see your boy is really interested in the piano. Maybe he should do like this and that. He went on and on for an hour. My father was looking at me, very good, son. You know how to be sociable. Now your life will be successful. So I saw the immediate results on the man. He was touched that someone was interested in his hobby and considered his hobby to be valuable. But I wasn't satisfied with that. I thought, this is manipulation. You know, I was 12 years old. This is manipulation. What am I actually doing for this person? What is this person actually doing for me? I'm just manipulating just to, you know, be well-liked, to be popular, to achieve some goals. I said, forget this. In dealing with devotees, our main skills come from Krishna. Dealing with devotees requires spiritual empowerment. Actually, dealing with any living entity, all living entities, requires empowerment from Krishna. But especially dealing with devotees. Devotees are special. Durvasa Muni was such a powerful yogi, performing so many severe austerities and penances, so many mystic abilities. He didn't know how to deal with devotees. So our main strength in dealing with devotees is empowerment from Krishna. By learning how to properly deal with devotees, our hearts will be satisfied. But we have to ask Krishna for that empowerment. You won't end up when you're 50 or 60 thinking, oh, I never had loving relationships. I've done service all my life, and I've never had a real heartfelt relationship. Devotional service, when properly done, with guidance, is the most intense loving experience. Nothing provides the intimacy that devotional service provides. Nothing provides a more powerful connection with other living entities than devotional service. But it takes some time to realize that, because devotional service is off the bodily platform. What's the Kali Yuga propaganda? Physicality, carnality is the most intense experience. Think about it, meditate on it, dream about it, scheme for it, grab for it, kill for it. Yeah, isn't that? That's Kali Yuga. There is nothing more absorbing. There is nothing more consuming than physicality and carnality. Leave all your troubles behind. Leave all your troubles behind and dive into the river of physicality. This is the hallucination of Kali Yuga. I realized over the years that living entities, particularly, we're talking about human beings, crave absorption. You want to be absorbed in something. You want an absorbing experience that just swallows you up. That's why people are consciously attracted to lust, because lust promises you'll be enveloped, you'll be absorbed, you'll be consumed. Of course, besides the conscious desire for absorption and to be consumed, there's also the hormones at play. Materialized means slavery to the hormones. So, can bhakti yoga provide adequate opportunity for absorption? That is our hidden unconscious question. Can bhakti yoga provide the experiences that will surpass the absorption potential that mundane relationships offer, particularly mundane physicality? Can bhakti yoga match that? This is the turbulence that's going on in our heart. Can it really match that? Of course. The intimacy brought about by human beings serving Krishna together and focusing on Krishna's pleasure is far beyond any material connection, physical connection, far beyond that. It takes some time to realize that, though. Therefore, we have our achar, our system of proper behaviors, to give you a chance to realize this treasure. It takes some time, actually a short time. Lives in Kali Yuga are very short. But to us, it seems it's a long time. You mean, I'm 25 now. I'm not going to have any deep realizations till I'm 50. Oh. Who can hold on that long? And what if I become 50 and I realize I haven't had a real material absorbing affair? I could be troubled by this. If we strive to become empowered by Krishna, to relate to devotees properly, that heart satisfaction which comes from relating to devotees properly, nothing can compare to it. Nothing. It's worth trying for. It's worth struggling for. Isn't it a fact that in material existence, with material relationships, you have to struggle? How many of you have had material relationships which just everything just fell into place automatically forever and ever and ever? No, there's constant effort required, struggle, and of course, work. Work has to be there to maintain the relationship. Isn't that struggle? So why is it that we look at bhakti yoga? Okay, I know it's true, we're all parts of Krishna, and if I just stick to the path of bhakti, in time I'll see all the beings as part of Krishna, I have a spiritual vision. I know all that's true, but there's so much struggle involved, so much endeavor, so much tolerance, austerity. And what does, how does the material energy make material relationships and material activities look? It's just so easy. You just dive into material desires and it all just happens. Of course that's not true. Anything that you strive for in material existence involves struggle, austerity. So many of you are working persons. How many of you just float into work every morning? Oh. Everything will just go my way. What will I do today? What suits my fancy today at the workplace? How many of you have jobs like that? And even if you're your own boss, you have your own business, still you're full of anxiety. Oh no. Oh, the profits are going down. What is the world economy? Even you have your own business. You can't just act any way you like. You have to impose. Having your own business means you're imposing austerities upon yourself. Working for someone else means they impose the austerities upon you. Either way, austerities are there. I hear from devotees, they have their own business. They're in charge, but still, there's austerity, there's struggles. They impose the struggle upon themselves, the austerities upon themselves. If they were working for someone else, they would accept the austerities and struggles from someone else. You can't get away from austerities and struggles as soon as you try to fulfill desires in this world. So why is it that we give bhakti yoga this negative connotation? Oh, I know Krishna is wonderful, I know bhakti yoga is sensational, but you have to struggle, you have to tolerate. That goes on in any sphere of life. By properly following devotional service, we won't wind up with this anger due to unfulfilled desires. What's the easy way to give yourself that assurance? Put your heart into associating with devotees. Sometimes they'll be disappointed. Isn't it so that in material relationships, sometimes there's disappointment? Yes, sometimes devotees will misunderstand you. Sometimes you'll misunderstand them. But through the effort to associate with devotees properly, you'll become empowered by Krishna. And your heart will be so satisfied. We're not simply speaking about devotees at the temple. We're also speaking about devotees in your own home. One has to be empowered to associate with the devotees in your own home. Otherwise, the tendency is to see the devotees in your own house as, you know, Here. After the initial romance phase wears off, it often comes down to that. Him, her, his mother, her mother. So even in our own home, we need empowerment from Krishna, how to see all living entities as his parts and parcels and deal with them properly. So my point today is all that fear about you'll wind up being angry and unfulfilled later on in life can be surpassed just by begging Krishna for the ability to associate with devotees, and your heart will be perfectly satisfied in that way. You'll see all living beings as part of Krishna. You'll see them in Krishna. You'll see Krishna in them. That is the solution for heart satisfaction.
All right, we'll stop here to ask any questions.
Everyone looks stunned. Did I say something wrong? Or maybe I was talking about something that was on the mind.
All right, we'll let you all think about it.
Hare Krishna. Thank you very much.